Well, I always get a loss for words every time I have to, every time I hit record. It's like the whole week is just like, all right, we're going to talk about this, we're going to talk about that, and then bam, recording in progress, recording in progress. And then I just go blank.
Just spew it, man.
Now, we used to, and we never had that problem either when we had Stickman and we had our studio.
The studio.
Great studio.
I actually just passed by there the other day for I had to go to sit up that way. Just
With
passed by an
Igor
old
doing the sound. I miss
yeah.
Igor doing the sound.
And the
Igor,
cat.
do the sound.
And the cat.
And the snake.
And the snake. I remember one show we were drinking tequila.
I remember one show we were eating pizza.
We were eating pizza. We were drinking
Yeah.
tequila.
Yeah. Oh, this is a festive opening.
Well, no, I mean we're not very festive. It's still
No,
only
we're not.
September. It's still only September.
So you saw, let me just fucking get right into it. You saw bits and pieces of the Taylor Hawkins show.
Streaming service Paramount Plus. I was working the day that it happened. So,
Yeah.
I kept getting text messages from you, from another friend of mine, James, and I was there's no way I was able to watch it. So the next day, Riley happened to be home from college that weekend, and we were just hanging out, and we put it on Paramount Plus. I was under the impression we were going to get the whole event. That's not the case. They broke it down into like a 45-minute program, and you got to see full performances, not every performance. You got to see like one song by this guy, one song by that guy, one song by this group, one song by that group. They definitely took, I think, the best that there was to offer, with the exception, I think, of one particular moment that I wasn't a fan of. You know what? I got to bring this up because of the day that we're recording. Our podcast always lines up with somebody dying, and this was a big one, man. The Queen of England died, man. That's a big one. I mean, we got to see a king be crowned, or we're going to get to see him be crowned, but he is the king. Prince Charles is now the king of England. I think that's amazing.
That is big news. And I thought I have some friends in the UK, so obviously I go to them
Yeah.
today. And you're right. We've always had this crazy cycle of the second we finish a show, and we've always done we're a bi-weekly podcast. We've always done every 2 weeks, and the second we press stop, somebody dies.
Yeah.
And then we have to wait 2 weeks to talk about it.
I didn't want to I don't want to change the topic at all. I just wanted to mention
No,
that I just
but
found
it's
that
funny you mention that
amazing.
because here's the thing though. This show, which will be our first show of our sixth season, will not air or be released until September 23rd. So it will have already been over 2 weeks from this
Today.
event, from this
Today.
happening. So
Today
this
being the eighth.
Queen Elizabeth II has passed away. At the age of 96,
96,
is
you are
it
correct.
96?
Yeah.
So that
And
is,
Charles is 73. So if you think about this, you and I are 52 years old. There's the possibility of us seeing two kings crowned in our lifetime, which is just like absurd to me. I mean, I'm like, wow, that just kind of threw me for a loop a little bit today when I heard the news that she passed. It really
Well,
did.
she's been around through our parents were kids. Our
She
parents were
was
kids when,
my mother was 2 years old when she was crowned.
it's kind of like how what would not the American equivalent, but let's say it's kind of like if Eisenhower were still president. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or I hate to be so negative, but I mean the Kennedy assassination was kind of huge for the United States. That's
But I'm talking in terms of the
oh,
longevity of her,
gotcha.
being there,
Of her
being
reign,
Queen of England, has been about the equivalent of, say, let's just
Eisenhower,
pretend that presidents stayed president until they die, So it probably would be I guess the time equivalent of, say, Eisenhower still being president. Or maybe, I don't know, not quite Truman, but I mean, Truman, I think, went up to like 1950. Two, I think. I'm not sure. I'm not sure of the
Pretty
how
amazing.
long, how long. Yeah, but
Again, I didn't want to get off topic. I just wanted to
no,
throw
it's
that out
not.
there.
There is no off topic here. You know, but I mentioned just now our sixth season, right? Number six. On this podcast, we've always talked about the absence of rock music in the big picture within the 21st century and its unfortunate irrelevance to the cultural zeitgeist in America. And if this Z generation and whatever follows is ever going to rise to the occasion and create something new and exciting and change the world with it, that's great. That has yet to be seen, though. So we've taken this conversation as far as it'll go, which is why we've decided to make this the final season of the Rock Under Fire podcast. So that's where we are. That's where I am with this. We're obviously involved in a lot of other things in our lives, and I spent a great deal of time in 2022 not thinking about this show. I did that show with Alison Rapp back in December, and I really didn't. I even said it then. I really didn't think I was coming back to do this again. If you were going to get a text from me, it was going to be, "Are you going to karaoke?" So, but anyway, something major happened this past weekend, which, you have, if there's anything spoken about Foo Fighters in the last 6 years on this podcast, it's been through you. You're a Foo Fighters fan,
You as well, though. I mean, you've had a lot to say about them.
I've never really been a fan, though. I've always kind of I've probably joked more about Dave Grohl than had a serious discussion about Dave Grohl.
But
But
your opinion, I think, holds some weight when you say, and I'm not saying it verbatim or not direct quoting you, but more along the lines of like how they're one of like rock saviors right now. If you need a band, if you need a rock band to show up and turn it out, call the Foo Fighters because they're going to show up.
My thing with Foo Fighters, and more so Dave Grohl, is, and this is not necessarily a bad thing. This is nothing against him. I like Dave Grohl. Dave Grohl is, he's a legend, man. He's an elder. He's now an elder statesman.
Yeah.
He is. He's one. He and Eddie Vedder are the elder statesmen of that generation,
Yeah.
right? So.
He's goddamn talented too. Oh my
Right.
God.
So my thing with Dave Grohl is because it was just the way we've always lamented the absence of rock and roll music in terms of having some sort of mainstream presence and cultural influence the way it did. Dave Grohl to me has always been, unfortunately, the token face of rock and roll as represented to the mainstream. In other words, every award show, every event, any opportunity to have a rock star there, it's always usually Dave Grohl. Kind of, the way you kind of saw that with Aerosmith in the 90s when grunge was still new and you didn't know how long that was going to last. You kind of didn't foresee these guys going into their 50s and being the legends that they ended up being, namely Dave Grohl, Eddie Vedder, Tom Morello, those guys. And obviously Chris Cornell, had he been here.
Aerosmith could be trusted, whereas a band like Guns N' Roses couldn't.
Right. And it was just kind of like, why is Aerosmith has to be at every award show, every sporting event, every super, even at the Super Bowl, even when they didn't play the halftime show, they were still playing out in the parking lot,
You
the
know what though?
pregame show.
They had a really good comeback and they needed to stay relevant and they kept pumping themselves
Right.
out
And I
there, which was
understand that.
smart.
And I'm not faulting them.
Oh,
I
sure
don't
not.
fault the artist. I fault this music industry, the powers that be, that we're going to lean on one or two token artists, and this is going to be, it was kind of like my whole thing about rock and roll losing its the danger, that sense of
Yeah.
danger of rock and roll and everything that it entailed, And that's all gone. So here's Dave Grohl, and he's become the smiling friendly face of rock and roll to the big picture. And that is not a, it's not a, it hasn't been a pleasant big picture over the last decade or so. I would say 2 decades. But again, Dave Grohl, man, they were the powerhouse that Nirvana should have been in terms of the longevity,
I
the
think, though,
sense
that
of evolution and playing rock music when audience, when adult audience that has grown with you and has grown with your music and has grown up to your music and having
I don't think Nirvana ever would have withstood that, the weight
right
of that. Pearl
and
Jam did.
having football stadiums filled with people all over the world shouting your lyrics back to you. They're huge in the UK. You know, there that's no secret. The UK loves Foo Fighters. So hats off to Dave Grohl for what he pulled off, man.
I'll go back to that original point I made. Nirvana never would have, they would have crushed under that weight. I think Kurt was just, I don't know how to even explain it. Kurt
Kurt wasn't
he
meant to
didn't
go
want
the
to,
distance.
no, and he didn't want to be as famous as he got.
It was like Jim Morrison, you know,
Or
it was
John, or even
inevitable.
John
It was
Lennon,
inevitable.
yeah, or even John Lennon to an extent, where Lennon just didn't want, Lennon just wanted to go live and do his thing, and by that time it was too late. He wasn't going to just blend into the population again. That was too far gone.
Well, you're talking in terms of Lennon not wanting to be a part of the whole music game and not his death, right? Because, I mean,
Right, right, right. He just wanted to kind of blend back in, and I think eventually, if Kurt didn't pass, I think that would have been him too, because the weight of all that, if ultimately, he put a gun to his head under the weight of all of that, and for partial reasons.
And for the same reason that you say, I think Lennon really would have identified with Cobain. I really think he would have embraced bands like Nirvana had he been around to see the 90s, you know?
I'm still hit or miss with that one.
Yeah, I know. You were at the last time I said that, you said the same thing.
Yeah, I'm one of the guys in the minority that thinks that, yes, Nirvana was great and they were good. I just think that there were so many better bands to come out of that. And
Of
maybe
course,
it's
yeah.
unfair. It's just unfair that they got stamped with it and they were like, okay, we're pushing you through the door first.
Well, I mean, I'm drawing on Nirvana because of the Dave Grohl factor. You know, I mean, you can't get to the Foo Fighters without having this happen to Kurt,
Very true.
right? You can't get to the Foo Fighters without having this happen to Nirvana. Now, you know, of course, there lies the question: had Kurt lived, how long Nirvana would have continued for? I mean, Kurt obviously wanted to work with Michael Stipe. They had talked about doing some project. Dave Grohl, I mean, you cannot suppress that kind of talent. I think Dave Grohl would have done something on his own anyway at
I would have
some
been real
point.
curious if that would happen. That's a question for
It
for
may
the
not have
ages.
been Foo Fighters, but I think he would have done something.
Well, it certainly could have been Foo Fighters, because so here's the thing though. When he wrote his first album, when he wrote that first Foo Fighters album, he did it entirely by himself, and it was more along the lines out of necessity, because he's like, well, fuck, now what do I do? So would it have been the Foo Fighters record that we got, or would it have been something just like, I don't know. It's hard to tell. It really, I mean, talent is talent, and Dave Grohl was always and will always do something. He's one of those enigmas. You know what I mean? He is like a Paul McCartney-esque musician, where he's just going to continue to do it, I think, until he can't anymore. Or even a Mick Jagger and Keith Richards type thing. They're going to continue to do it till they can't do it anymore. I mean, there's, that passion is always going to be there. Some people handle it better than others, but what was really amazing about that whole Wembley thing is, and we can get into a lot of the artists and stuff like that and have that whole conversation, but the amount of passion and feeling that he had, not only for playing with some of the people he played with that day, but for his fallen comrade. I mean, there was one. I mean, for him to just break down the way he did, you're just like, wow, man, he really, they liked each other a lot. They were good friends, and that's a bitter pill to swallow when
They
you're out
were
there in
brothers,
front of,
man. They were Mick and Keith, They were
I
Mick
mean,
and Keith. They were John and Paul. It was that
yeah.
intrinsically woven, into each other's musical. You know what I mean? Their musical DNA.
Yeah, it was
They
woven together,
shared the
yes.
same. They shared the same blood almost. They had a common vision.
And they love their craft. I mean,
You
based on some of the influences that both of them have, or in Taylor's case had, are just, they're so similar. There was a synergy there that just, like you said, Mick and Keith, John and Paul, that synergy, you can't. That's something that's not, those people like that, they gravitate to each other for a reason. It's nothing that's taught. It's nothing that, you learn to you build off of one another. But I mean, they're drawn to each other for a reason. I firmly believe that. Fagin and Becker, I firmly believe in those partnerships, that they're drawn to one another.
Yeah, you weren't going to hear about any infighting or hatred between these two artists. Like you heard things about some other bands that are just kind of dysfunctional families, and they take off 6, 7 years and they do a tour, and then they can't stand each other again.
The
Kick this
police.
guy out, and this
The
guy disappears for 2 albums, and then comes back.
police hate each other again.
So since the majority of the rock concerts. And again, the rock, rock is still very much alive. You just have to look for it. Those people aren't going to like what I'm going to say. But, since the majority of rock concerts filling the major venues are all, not some, are all artists over the age of 50, with most of them being in their 70s, if we are indeed witnessing the final phase of rock history, then the Taylor Hawkins tribute will go down as one of the absolute high points. Rock's final years. I feel that strongly about what happened at Wembley Stadium on Saturday, September 3rd, 2022.
It was certainly special.
That was a triumph of humanity, man. It was a triumph of the human heart and spirit, and a triumph for the
Humanity.
multi-generational impact of rock music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where you saw the multi-generational impact of those who are left.
How they influenced those who are no longer with us, and how some of those who are no longer with us were still able to fill that room, either by a blood relative or by somebody else just paying homage to them. Because it's no
Right.
secret, Taylor Hawkins was a fabulous drummer, fantastic drummer. But man, did that guy like music. There's just no two ways about it that he liked, I mean, just based on some of the people that showed up at this thing that were his idols, that they, I mean, they showed up for him because he got excited when he went to go see Queen perform with their new singer. All that stuff, he was excited about McCartney. McCartney is obviously a good friend of Dave Grohl's as well. Chrissie Hynde. I mean, it's just that, and that's just like the older generation stuff. I can really get into the Eddie Van Halen thing and Wolfgang coming out and doing a note for note on Hot for Teacher and On Fire, and just melting people, man. It melting. Grohl just looking at him in awe, like, you learned this from the guy who wrote it. You learned that from your dad, man.
Yeah, it's speaking of Wolfgang, it's like there each artist on that stage, man, aside from it being the obvious tribute and celebration of, the work and the life of Taylor Hawkins, each of those guys, man, each of those artists were kind of like it seemed like to me that they were in some sort of like their own deep personal moment where
Yeah, that's
of
very
like
fair.
having come full circle.
Yeah,
Or
it's
they
very fair.
brought this energy that was kind of like maybe informed by their own personal sense of like either closure of some personal sort or just a nod to those who are left. So, or like whatever whatever it's going to bring to the future, you know. And Wolfgang Van Halen, who as his own person, who's been out there with his own bands, doing it without leaning on his father's legacy, doing it the right way as far as I'm concerned, doing
Absolutely.
It with dignity, being the new band in town, being the opening act on the Guns N' Roses tour, being humble about all of it, and then going out there in front of the entire world, man, and when nobody expects it, you blow the entire fucking world away by conjuring up the ghost of Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
It was like his personal moment to touch his father's spirit, you know, and it was his own moment to shine, like, on his own. You know what I mean?
And yeah, no, and it's no secret. He is a huge, huge Foo Fighters fan. Now, Riley and I saw him a few months back at Starland Ballroom, local to New Jersey here, and it might have been, it was shorter than a week, 3 days, 2 days maybe, when Taylor died, did an acoustic version of Hero, and it was just mind-blowing. I mean, he's great on his own. He is. But you're right. I mean, to see him summon, you know, and there were those little moments where he looked up at the sky and he held that guitar up to the
when
sky.
He
Like,
walked off stage and he put his finger up.
Yeah.
That was for both Taylor, but that was for his dad. That
For his
one was
dad.
For his, you know.
Absolutely, it was. And the kid is good. The kid is just so good.
I think about Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson, right? I mean, that alone, man. Between Dave Grohl recounting one of Taylor Hawkins' career moments, right? He gets to play with Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson and essentially be Neil Peart.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And take that to Geddy and Alex being up there without Neil Peart now. Or I don't know, maybe that was that the first time they played without him publicly, or had they done it
second.
Already?
They had done it for the South Park anniversary. South Park had a little anniversary and they came out and played with one of the guys from South. I'm not a big South Park fan, but one of those guys is a drummer. Might be Trey. I don't remember which one, but Alex and Eddie, Alex and Geddy came out and played with him there. So
yeah.
I believe that this was only the second time. Oh, actually, they might have done something with Primus too, because Primus did the Farewell to Kings tour where they played the entire
Yeah,
Farewell to Kings album.
That's right. That's right.
So they might have done something there. I would have to look that up on YouTube, but there's a possibility. So, okay, even still, the third time, you lost arguably one of the top five drummers to ever sit behind a drum set.
It doesn't change the symbolic nature
sure,
of what was
sure.
happening, because you had two spirits converging on that stage, forming the perfect fucking storm, right? It was magical. That YYZ, man, was fucking glorious, man.
Yeah.
Right? You could see the look in Dave Grohl's eyes, man, when he was behind that drum kit.
Well, yeah, he got to be Neil for that moment, right? I mean, he broke onto the rock
song,
scene as
not
a
the
drummer.
First, not the second one, but the first song that
right.
he did.
Yeah.
Not whatever the first song was.
It's off of 2112.
Yeah. Because I don't think Dave played the second song. I don't think Dave played YYZ.
See, I didn't get to see the second one. I only got to see the first one. But I think that was 2112, the overture part, like that first part of 2112.
But there's a moment where he looks at Geddy Lee for some sort of a cue or something, man. You could see his face. He was fucking working. He was working hard, man. You know, you could tell he doesn't play drums much anymore. You know,
no, he never had to.
But he just exerted probably more energy and passion on that stage than he has in years, man. That 6 hours, because he spent most of the 6 hours on stage.
He did. He was on the stage a lot. Whether it was playing bass, playing drums, playing guitar, singing, whatever he was doing. I mean, the guy is just, you know, you can't argue how polished he is. I mean, you know, I want to touch on one negative thing. It's really not negative. It's just, I didn't feel like it was great.
Right.
And that was Paul McCartney coming out with Chrissy Hynde and doing Oh Darling. I didn't think it gelled. It sounded like they had to have rehearsed some of this stuff. It just didn't sound right to me. And Chrissy, let me take it back a step. Chrissy blew it away with Brass and Pocket. I got to see that.
That was great.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. So good, man. So, so good. Even Pat Smear was just having a good time, like playing some of that stuff. But yeah, Oh Darling just didn't do it for me, man. I and I hate to say that. I'm a Beatles guy. You know that. I like Chrissie Hynde. I like the Pretenders a lot. But that just didn't, it didn't click. It just didn't do it for me.
Aside from, I love the first two or three Pretenders albums, man, as much as any rock and roll music that I love. Especially the first one. I love that first Pretenders album. And I was thinking about when we years ago when we did that episode. It was one of our very early episodes when we did our favorite debut albums.
Right.
And I don't remember if I included the Pretenders, and I was like, the Pretenders
I have no
debut.
idea.
But no, Oh Darling, man, that struck me as a big surprise to find that they supposedly haven't done that song. I don't
Yeah.
understand. I mean, has Paul never played that song?
That's what they said, right? That it was like the first time that he's played that, I think, since the Beatles days, which is mind-blowing to me. I mean, that's I at least read that. I mean, it could have been a gossip column. I don't remember exactly where I read it from, but yeah, that was, maybe. And obviously, he's way up there in age. There's stuff he's not going to hit vocally anymore. And I felt Chrissie was a little off and on about it too. And I don't know. There was only one other moment that I felt awkward about, and that was that guy from the Darkness taking the microphone from Brian Johnson of
I
AC/DC.
saw that from an audience perspective, and Brian Johnson did this. He
He
called
did.
him over to do that. Like he almost handed it. And I don't know if the camera showed it that way.
They did. But the true
Oh, they
story
did.
behind that, he
What
did call
happened
him out.
there?
He wanted him to come out, certainly wanted him to come out. The guy, I don't even know the guy's name, the singer from the Darkness. They were supposed to, the stagehand was supposed to give him a microphone. He was
Justin
supposed,
Hawkins.
Hawkins, okay. He was supposed to have another microphone. And some scramble backstage to where he couldn't get a microphone, couldn't get a microphone. And Brian's calling him out at that moment. And just pushed him out there. It wasn't a horrible thing. It was just I'm not an AC/DC guy. I was just like, eh. It was cool to see Lars jam that out though. Lars like really showed some passion on the kit playing that.
It was the whole day. It was just a celebration of rock and roll, and I think that was it was much better than everybody getting up there and playing Foo Fighters. Because I was wondering if that's what it was going to be, and that was, I'll be honest, man. Again, I've never been a fan. I can't name 10 songs from Foo Fighters. I know the hits. I'm not crazy about the hits. They're good songs. They're obviously great written pop rock songs, like in the vein of the same way that Tom Petty was a great writer of pop rock songs, three chord songs that fucking rock. Etchy on contact. By the third time you hear them, you know them, right? That's how I always viewed Foo Fighters, but they've never really grabbed me enough they've never connected with me on that personal level. And so, where am I going with this? I forgot what I was about to say. But I mean, listen, every performance was this statement of purpose, the gathering itself, the intense emotion throughout that crowd, was in itself a communion, and it was not just a tribute to Taylor Hawkins, it was a tribute to David Bowie, the moment that Nile Rodgers went on, it was
Oh,
like
that was
taking
so
baby steps,
great.
man. It was like taking the last 6 years of people of losing people, man.
That was so great.
You had that subtle visual tribute to Olivia Newton-John on the bass drum, while Van Halen, while they were doing the Van Halen songs. It was just a celebration of rock and roll, past and present, in a way that maybe we haven't seen in a long time, or maybe even haven't seen yet. It was on the scale of Live Aid,
Yeah,
where you
absolutely.
had this thing going on overseas and America's tuned in to what's going on across the Atlantic, watching on UK time. What I took from it was, and it really hit home with Brian May, at least for me, when Brian May got out there and who played there? What was it? 30, 37 years before for Live Aid. And he got out there and it became all about the legend of Freddie Mercury. Queen brought down the house and arguably stole the show of that entire day, maybe if not just the UK, probably
All of Live
the
Aid.
entire Live Aid.
Yeah.
And so 37 years later, Brian May, who was kind of, I hate to say, but it's true, was invisible when Freddie was alive. You know, unless you were a Queen fan, not much of the world knew Brian May. He was the guitarist in Queen, and he was, I mean, if you were a Queen fan, shit, yeah, you knew who Brian May was.
Yeah.
I, as a kid, 7, 8, 9 years old, buying News of the World, I knew who Brian May was. But, you know, for Brian May to get out in the middle of Wembley Stadium, sit down with an acoustic guitar, take the lead vocals on Love of My Life, and have 70,000 people shouting those lyrics back to him. I was ecstatic for Brian May, man. You
Yeah.
know, because that had to have been some kind of, you know, that was personal for Brian May, whatever he was connecting that
It's a
to,
life-altering event,
past
yeah.
and the present. And again, here we are, man.
It was
Rock
like
and roll is,
euphoric almost.
it's like rock and roll is kind of collectively on its farewell tour now. If you think about all of the major artists and kind of like our generation's artists came out in the 90s that still are about 10 years behind, you know, they'll be around maybe another 10 years, you know, I think, I hope. But given all of the people that we've lost in the last 5, 6, 7 years, man, here are those who are left.
Before I forget this, you know who Riley's going to see?
Oh,
Greta Van Fleet.
is she?
Yeah, with one of her roommates.
Wow, where are they playing?
Allentown, I think. She's in
Now, what
love
kind
with.
of, are they playing major venues, or are they playing like,
I don't know what that venue is. I have no idea. I just was. I'm her One of her roommates is a really, really cool kid. Loves music. Riley always tells me that me and her dad are a lot alike in like what we listen to and how we listen to music and how we presented our music to them. Like her dad is a huge Eddie Van Halen guy, but I was FaceTiming with Riley and she points to her roommate there, and her roommate's wearing a Ghost sweatshirt, and I'm like, oh wow, look at that. The kid, I mean, she knows like her music, you know. It was pretty cool. Dirty Honey right now is one of my favorite bands out. New as far as new music goes, I saw them. Wolfgang opened up for them, and they actually opened up for the Black Crowes. But their California Dreamin' is their record. It's really good. I like it a lot.
DJ Chaos from the karaoke term tried to turn me on to them. They were good, man. Again, they didn't really grab me, but they definitely rock.
Bluesy rock, yeah.
Yeah, was it about 2018? I think I made the prediction during one of our when we did a Greta Van Fleet episode. I think I made the prediction that 2 years from now, 2020, they'll be playing the Garden. Did that ever
I don't know.
happen? Do you know? I mean,
I
I know
don't
that
know.
when the pandemic hit, kind of threw everything.
I don't know. I mean, they had a I don't know. They're still doing well. They're still
They might
touring. A
be
lot of their stuff's out.
big enough to play the Garden if they haven't already. That's
They
an
might be.
interesting question to find out if they played the Garden yet.
I don't know if they're playing Allentown Fairgrounds or if there's an arena out there. I'm not sure. I am actually, where was my phone? I could actually look it up and probably see what their tour is or where their stops are, right? You could
Yeah.
probably, They probably have their here it is, Greta Van Fleet tour. Tickets on sale. They're playing at the Allentown Arena. That's where she's going to go see
All
them.
right, so that's
So they're Times
they're on
Union
the level
Arena
of
in
sports
Albany.
arenas.
Yeah, they're playing at the Trump Taj Mahal in Atlantic City. Cross Insurance Center up in Bangor, Maine.
Is that Taj Mahal? That's what they're playing. Is that still the Taj Mahal, or is it still, or they need something else?
I guess it is. I don't know. I
I
don't
could have
know.
sworn it was something else. Didn't they make it, or
Hard
like pull
Rock,
his
maybe
name
they made
off
it
it?
something.
Didn't they
I
pull
don't
his
know.
name off it, or knock it down, or
One of the they pulled his name off of one of
blow
those
that
buildings,
shit
which
up,
is pretty fun.
blow that shit up, make sure everybody's out of the building?
I don't know if this is the
I don't
current
know. They
tour.
destroyed that building a couple of years ago.
No, the Taj was connected to another hotel there, so they didn't really tear it down, but they tore down that logo. Hard Rock Live in Florida. I don't even know if this is the current tour or not.
What's the building they demolished in Atlantic City about 3 years ago?
I don't know. He had a couple of that Trump Towers, maybe.
No, Trump Tower is in the city.
He had another Trump
There's a
casino down
couple of
there,
things,
though.
man. There's a place on fucking on the east side, and then there's the place on Central Park West, right next to where Sting lives,
Yeah,
that
but what did he have? He
15
had
building
Trump, just Trump Casino, maybe it
West,
was. Trump
Park
Casino,
West,
not
I think.
Trump Towers. Not Trump Tower. Trump Casino, I guess it was. And he had that, and he had Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
I don't even know, man. I
Because I
don't know
think
what they're.
he's won Central Park West. I'm not sure. I think that's the address, but I know there's a building on the on Central Park West, and there's a building on the east side. But anyway, not important.
No. All right, so here's for the tickets, the dates. Financial Center in Detroit. They're playing like Coliseums, it looks like. Wells Fargo Arena in Iowa.
There you go. The garden's coming.
I'm looking to see what they're doing. This looks like a more accurate thing. The People Center in Allentown. MVP Arena in Albany. Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut. Yeah, like arenas. It looks like a little arena tour.
No
Speckle.
garden.
So far, no. That Jersey thing must have been old because that's not, here it is, Hard Rock Live at the Estes Arena. That's Atlantic City. They're
Estes
playing.
Arena is basically the Trump Taj Mahal, what used to be, or if it still is.
Playing
That is.
two nights they're playing there. December 9th and 10th.
Oh, it's the Hard Rock. It used to
Yeah, Hard
be
Rock
the
Live.
yeah. That's it. That's that
That used to be
building.
the Taj, yeah, because
Okay,
it
so
was
that's not a
connected to the
Hard
show
Rock,
or
and
something.
Estes Arena is basically where they used to have boxing, and they have concerts there too. That's been there forever, man. I remember seeing Bob Dylan there in the 90s.
And then they're playing a Bourbon and Beyond festival except that's coming up or past. No, it's coming up September 15th. Pearl
Wow.
Jam's going to be at that. Wow.
Well, anyway, this is our first episode back after what, 6 years? Have we
Seems like
been
it's
back since the pandemic happened? Yeah, we did two.
yeah.
Actually, we did. That's pretty good, man.
We
I
did
think
some pandemic shows.
that's impressive, man. We managed to pull off three. No, we managed to pull off two full seasons, man,
Yeah.
since the pandemic started. I mean, look, that's there are podcasts out there that are probably like, what are you talking about, dude? You're like on episode 78, and we did 78 during our first 6 months, you know, in
Whatever.
existence, man. There are podcasts went out there with hundreds and hundreds of and hundreds and thousands of episodes. But like you said, we're like a tortoise. Well, how did you describe us in episode 6 or 7, man? We're around for the long haul. We're kind of
Yeah.
like slowly emerge into our own type thing. Think about this though. The Sopranos, they were around how many seasons? How many years? They did seven
Six,
seasons, six or
seven?
seven
Six. I
seasons.
thought it was only six, but yeah, maybe seven. All right.
And they only did like 70 something episodes too. So
Yeah.
we're right kind of neck and neck with the Sopranos right now.
Where do you get these fucking idiots, huh? Where do you get them? I'm sweeping the cheese. I'm trying to get. Leave the fucking cheese there!